from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello talks with the Register's Middle East correspondent, Michelle Chabon, about Pope Francis's trip to the Holy Land this weekend. And later in the show, she'll be talking about the new book, The Love That Made Mother Teresa, with author David Scott. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Dan Burke is off this week. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Michelle Chabon, is the Register's longtime Middle East correspondent. She's lived in Israel for 2 decades and has covered religious news in that region for USA Today and Religious News Service, among other publications. Today she'll be talking with us about the news around Pope Francis's trip to the Holy Land this weekend, Saturday through Monday.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Michelle, you've been very busy in these past few weeks. You've been covering the news of the Pope's visit to the Holy Land for a number of different newspapers and outlets, and we're so grateful to have you covering it for the Register. So thank you so much for doing this work for us.
I'm really happy to.
Michelle, in the past few weeks leading up to Pope Francis's visit to the Holy Land, there have been some protests, especially anti-Christian graffiti in some of the Catholic sites, including the center where Pope Francis is staying, as well as demonstrations at the Cenacle. Who's protesting and why?
Okay, first of all, let's distinguish between two things. You mentioned the attacks. The Israeli police say these attacks, which have been against church property, but also against property belonging to Arabs, against mosques, against liberal synagogues, and even against army bases, are being carried out by a small group of Jewish ultranationalists. These are the same types of people who want to establish tiny Jewish settlements on hilltops in the West Bank.
Okay.
They are politically far right-wing, and they are definitely extremists. These extremists are angry at the Israeli government for demolishing Jewish settlements and limiting the expansion of new ones.
Okay.
By committing so-called price tag attacks, they're trying to embarrass the Israeli government in the eyes of the world, while at the same time telling Israel's minorities, this is a Jewish country, you aren't welcome here.
Wow.
Their actions and beliefs obviously do not represent the actions and beliefs of the vast majority of the Israeli people,
right?
Including the Jews. You also mentioned the demonstrations taking place over the Cenacle, which is the room of the Last Supper. Pope Francis, will be holding a mass there.
Okay.
There are some ultra-Orthodox Jews, again, who are extremists, who don't want Christians praying in the Cenacle because the Cenacle is located physically directly above David's tomb, where many Jews believe the biblical King David is buried. They feel that giving the church more access to the Cenacle will in some way make David's tomb ritually impure or unfit for Jewish prayer.
Okay.
These extremists are demonstrating because they've heard rumors that the Israeli government is preparing to give control or even sovereignty of the Cenacle to the Vatican during Pope Francis's visit. But that's something that both the Israeli and Catholic Church officials adamantly deny. Monsignor William Shamali, the auxiliary bishop in Jerusalem, personally assured me a few days ago that the church is simply seeking permission to hold prayers at the Cenacle 2 hours every morning before pilgrims arrive. There's no talk of control or sovereignty.
Well, thank you for those clarifications because, you know, sometimes in the news that we get, we don't quite understand the issues, but you being there on the ground is really very, very helpful. You know, you've lived in the Holy Land for 20 years, and that's a long time. More than that, so you know the people there in a very particular way because they're your neighbors. How are your neighbors responding? How are the local people, not these extremists, how are they responding to the Holy Father's trip?
Well, as you know, Jerusalem is a very diverse city. It's home to all kinds of people, Christians, Muslims, Jews, and others. Everyone, of course, you know, has their own opinion. I would say for Christians, this is an extremely exciting event. They feel that the Pope's visit, short though it is shorter than previous people visits, is a sign of solidarity with them. First of all, it brings tourists, it brings pilgrims, it brings business, and financially they suffer when they don't have business. But more than that, they feel very often that they are forgotten. They represent just less than 2% of the population in Israel and also in the Palestinian-ruled West Bank, what many call Palestine.
Yes.
So they really, really appreciate this visit more than I can say. The Jews and the Muslims, they pretty much are taking it in stride. I think Jewish Jerusalemites are not happy with the traffic delays and the reroutings, just like New Yorkers don't appreciate it so much when there are dignitaries visiting the United Nations. But at the same time, Jews understand that the Pope is a spiritual leader of the Catholics and also a very important figure in the entire Christian world. And they respect him for who he is, and they've also heard that he's a very good and kind and modest man. And they have said that a lot. Muslims, both in Jerusalem and in the West Bank, are also very excited about the visit because Christians and Muslims live very close together. And most 80% of the Holy Land's Christians are, in fact, Arab. So they feel that solidarity and that unity with the visit. Okay.
This is Jeanette DeMello. I'm on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to Michelle Chabin from Jerusalem, who's talking to us about Pope Francis's visit to the Holy Land. Now, Michelle, I do want to ask you about Pope Francis's trip itself. He is there from the 24th through the 26th of May. He's going to many, many places. His schedule's jam-packed, but I do want to know, what are some of the highlights of his trip?
Well, the first leg of the Pope's visit is Jordan, where he will meet the King of Jordan and his wife at the Royal Palace in Amman. Very importantly, the Pope will be holding a holy mass at a stadium in Amman, and I just read that 1,200 Catholic children will be baptized at that time.
Wow.
So, you know what? I have to go back. The first leg of the Pope's visit is Jordan, where he will meet with the royal family in Amman. He will hold a holy mass at the international stadium in Amman, and 1,200 Catholic children will celebrate communion during the mass.
Wow.
Early Sunday, on May 25th, he'll be flying, I think by helicopter, to Bethlehem.
Okay.
Well, he will be meeting with Palestinian leaders before holding a holy mass in Major Square in Bethlehem.
Okay.
The mass is actually intended for Holy Land Christians, some of whom will be arriving from Nazareth in Israel because the Pope will not be holding a mass in Israel itself.
Okay.
Pope Francis will then have a private visit to the Grotto of the Nativity in Bethlehem, which is, as we know, grottos are, is an underground cave.
Right.
Very importantly, the Pope very much wants to show respect to local Palestinians, both Muslim and Christian, and will be meeting with Palestinian children of both faiths at the Dehesha refugee camp, which is in Bethlehem.
Right.
And he will also be having lunch. He'll be hosting Palestinian families. The final leg of the visit will be in Israel, where the Pope will, again, meet with Israel's leaders. Like other Israeli heads of state, he'll visit the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial, and he'll pray at the Western Wall. He will also meet with the Muslim Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and chief rabbis. I have to say that Israel has scheduled the visit. It's only a one-day visit, really, 1.5 days, with so many ceremonies, you know, the kinds of things that other dignitaries do, that there's not a whole lot of time for Pope Francis to be meeting, you know, with local people, unfortunately.
Right, sure.
I assume that in the future maybe he'll be coming back. The Pope will be spending time with priests, seminary students, and others connected to the Catholic Church. And I can say that the Catholic Church is very, very fortunate to have a wonderful seminary in the town of Beit Jala, which is right next to Bethlehem, which prepares seminarians for service in both the Holy Land and abroad. And the students are from Jordan, Lebanon, Palestine, and I believe there's even one from Israel.
Well, like I said, it's really a jam-packed schedule, but one of the most important meetings of the trip, in fact, it's the reason he's making this trip, is the 50th anniversary of a meeting that happened between the Ecumenical Patriarch Athenagoras and Paul VI. Now, Holy Father, our current Holy Father, is going to be meeting with the Patriarch Bartholomew I. So tell us, what's the significance of this meeting?
The meeting that this visit now is commemorating was frankly unprecedented. Pope Paul was the first pope then, since the 9th century, to refer to the Eastern churches as sister churches. It was an important gesture that Pope Paul went to Jerusalem to meet the Ecumenical Patriarch, and that the Ecumenical Patriarch did not need to travel to Rome. This was an unprecedented act of unity that led to the cancellation of the excommunications of the Great Schism of 1054. This historic meeting paved the way for greater mutual respect between the Vatican and the Eastern churches. And they had been somewhat estranged, and maybe that's an understatement.
Right.
Over the past 50 years, the message has been clear. Theologically, there are few differences between us, the Vatican is saying, let's find the common denominator, the common ground, and foster unity. And that's exactly what's been happening, slowly but surely. They're not there yet, but it's a very, very, very important step in the right direction.
Sure. And even and since Paul VI, Pope John Paul II, and Pope Benedict have made strides in this ecumenical relationship with the Patriarch, and now we are seeing just the furthering of that. Patriarch Bartholomew actually went to the installation mass of Pope Francis. So this is something that we're really looking forward to seeing, the continuation of this relationship that has begun, you know, in 1964. Now, another very, very interesting thing, we only have just 1 minute left, but a very interesting thing to note is the travel companions of Pope Francis this very short trip. So tell us who he's traveling with.
The two men joining Francis, Pope Francis, are friends with whom the Pope frequently collaborated when he was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Rabbi Abraham Skorka. Mm-hmm. He is either the rector or the former rector of the Latin American Rabbinical Seminary in Buenos Aires, and Sheikh Omar Aboud, a former Secretary General of the Islamic Center of Argentina. They know the Pope, and the Pope knows them from his days as the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, and even before. They shared many good meals. Rabbi Skorka spoke to some journalists yesterday, and I was there. And they have studied together and debated theology together, and that they have often talked a lot about Argentinian football teams. According to everyone associated with the trip, this is a tremendous statement also of good relations, of goodwill. The Vatican spokesman, Reverend Federico Lombardi, said it was the first time that leaders of other faiths are part of an official papal delegation.
Right, so it's historic.
Lombardi said the aim is to send an extremely strong and explicit signal about interfaith dialogue and the normality of having friends of other religions.
Well, we're really looking forward to the rest of the coverage of this important trip, that historic aspect, the, his travel companions, his meeting with the Ecumenical Patriarch. The Register actually has three journalists who are covering this, you, Michelle, and we also have Peter Smith, who's our staff writer who's over there, and Marge Fenlon, who'll be blogging for us and writing a travel log. So the Register really has a lot of coverage of this. We hope our listeners will follow. And Michelle, we're very, very grateful for your work, your constant work there in the Holy Land. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, and Godspeed.
When we return, why are people still talking about Mother Teresa? Why did her work and her life make such a huge impact on all of us? We're going to talk with the author of a new book on Mother Teresa next. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
Dr. Ray Guarendi talks about the National Catholic Register.
The Register is catechetical news. In other words, it teaches the news from the perspective of the catechism. And you can learn all kinds of good things about the church and faithful living through the Register. They cover a wide, wide range. Catechesis, explaining the faith, what's going on in the world, in the Vatican. Good, solid Catholic journalism. The Register helps people cut through the spin. There's no spin in the Register. It is faithful Catholic teaching, analyzing of the news from a Catholic perspective.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, David Scott, is the current Vice Chancellor of Communications for the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Previously, he was editor of Our Sunday Visitor. David's work has been published in print media throughout the world, including L'Osservatore Romano, National Review, Inside the Vatican, and here at the Register. David has also authored several books, including A Revelation of Love, The Meaning of Mother Teresa, and Praying in the Presence of Our Lord with Dorothy Day. Today he's here to talk about his newest book, which is available from our EWTN religious catalog. The book is The Love That Made Mother Teresa.
It's great to be here. An honor.
Dave, this is the second book that you've written about Mother Teresa, as the intro said, and she seems to have really captured your attention. Can you tell us why?
Because she captured everybody's attention. I mean, the genesis of the project was that, I wanted to look at her after she died, you know, just as a phenomenon. We knew so little about her. She had a kind of a humble ministry, and yet suddenly she ended up on the world stage. So I really started the project as a journalist.
Right. Now, you said that she had, everyone knew her. She captured everyone's attention. There are thousands, millions probably, photographs of her. And yet in the book you mention how we really didn't know her. We have these pictures, but we didn't know her. What are some of the details of her life that you feel like people should know, that we really need to know?
Well, there's not a lot of biographical detail. She made sure that we know very little about her life, and there was some circumstances, you know, coming from Albania, which was behind the Iron Curtain for most of the last century, all that kind of historical data was gone. You could never go and interview somebody who knew her when she was a little kid or, you know, talk to the people in her high school class. So that was gone. I think what we need to know is exactly what she left us, and which is, a life lived totally for Jesus, which, sounds like a platitude, but, I mean, she really showed us how that worked in day-to-day life.
Now, David, you know, one of the things about your book, it's a rather easy read. It's easy to pick up and to read a chapter at a time. The chapters are rather short, which makes it a quick read, and it's really nice to be able to read it in that way. It's sort of meditational, but it also has a bit of humor in it. So I've been enjoying the book, but it seems like it's a bit of an apologetic for saints in general. You mention in one place that some saints are known to be quirky, cantankerous, temperamental, you know, that they're not always people who everyone liked. And, you know, we see that with actually Pope John Paul. He was being canonized, and all of a sudden you start getting a lot of criticisms of him. And there was that of Saint Blessed Mother Teresa as well. But what really sets saints apart if they're not just totally, totally, totally lovable?
Yeah, so, you know, saints are of their time and place. So we make a mistake if we think that they have any of the, they're any different than us. So it's very, you know, you don't want to divinize the Blessed Mother. You don't want to divinize the saints. They're, you know, they had political views we might not share. They had quirky habits that we might not want to live with. What sets them apart, I think, is this intention, the intention to live every moment for the glory of God and for the love of our neighbors, you know, which is holiness defined in a very simple way is, you know, loving God with all your heart and loving your neighbor as yourself, with a great commandment. And so if that's your intention every day and in every act, you know, the other stuff kind of, you burn that off as you get older. But there's no question she was, she could be I had an old priest friend when I was writing the book. He said he had known Mother Teresa, and he said, "Don't forget to tell everybody that she was a tough old bird." And you know, he meant that affectionately, right? But she was tough. She didn't suffer fools. She was very dedicated in her task.
Right. This is Jeanette DeMello. I'm on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to David Scott, the author of "The Love That Made Mother Teresa." David, you have said in your book, in the introduction, or excuse me, the foreword, which was written by Archbishop Gomez of L.A., you both said that Mother Teresa is God's response to our times. She is a sign of our times. How so?
Well, there's a lot of different dimensions, but probably the biggest thing for me is that, you know, we live in big times. So you open the newspaper this morning, you know what's going on in Nigeria or Syria. You can see all across the world. We have a big picture now, and yet here we had a saint who reminded us that. So the big picture can be kind of overwhelming. You know, what can I do about those poor girls in Nigeria? What can I do about Syria? And her, the response of the saint is that the way you affect the world is through your own little actions, your own little works of love. And I think that's what she, you know, she's known for that beautiful little expression, do little things with great love. And that's the key to changing the world. So I think that's, to me, that's her big message for our times, is that we change the world one little act of love at a time in our own lives.
That's right. Now, in a way, you said that she's a very she'll be a historical saint. She'll be one of those special saints that we remember for something rather specific. And I believe that what you were talking about, in a way, it seems like a small thing to us, that she was the saint of the global village, not simply of Calcutta, the place where she lived, but because we all saw her image of the images of her serving the poor, that she actually is a saint of the whole world. That was a unique observation you made there.
Yeah, I think, you know, we remember St. Francis of Assisi. We may recognize the name of Bernard of Clairvaux, but we remember Francis of Assisi. There are certain saints in history that capture us by what they stand for and kind of by what they stir up inside of us. You know, you want to love the world like St. Francis. You want Mother Teresa. You want to be able to put aside your selfishness like Mother Teresa and serve people who are annoying to you and your families. And there's something very human that gets touched by these saints, and I think that makes them saints for the ages.
Now, you also mentioned that Mother Teresa was named, actually she would say, not after the big Teresa, meaning St. Teresa of Avila, but after the little Teresa, meaning St. Teresa of Lisieux. And I think we've heard, as you've explained a lot about Mother Teresa, we've heard the little way mentioned quite often in the way you describe Mother Teresa. What are some of the similarities between these two saints?
In terms of how they lived, very, very little, but the spirituality is, in my opinion, absolutely the same. Thérèse went about her day in the convent trying to do little things like the laundry with great love, and that expression. And Mother Teresa went about her day the same thing. I think the root is always in the Eucharist. Mother Teresa would say that every day I have our Lord in the Eucharist, and every day I have our Lord in the poor. And it's the real presence of Christ in the people we meet, and in all the tasks that we have. So everybody we meet, you're seeing the presence of God, and in the Eucharist we have the true presence of Christ as well. So you have this chance to serve Christ in every moment, and I think Thérèse would have said the same thing.
What would you say is the way that we today, just you or me, anyone living their lives, how do we actually follow and imitate Mother Teresa? I mean, she served the poorest of the poor. Her hands were dirty with death, really. I mean, she treated those who were dying. How do you or I actually serve in such a heroic way?
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to put it, her hands dirty with death. The answer for her was she would tell everybody who came, you know, people would travel from all over the world to meet her and to serve the poor there. And she'd say, you know, this is great that you're here, but go home, because the poorest people are in your own home. They're the people who need our attention. They're the people. It was another saint who said, you know, that we love God as much as we love the person we love the least, right? So it's hard to love people in our home, our spouse when they're annoying, our children, to do these different tasks, the in-laws, the extended family. Those are the people who need our love, and those are the biggest challenges. She would also say it's very easy to love people who are far away, because you can love the poor in the abstract, but to love them, those people who are closest to us all the time, even when you don't want to, that's the real way we imitate Mother Teresa's love.
Yeah, and as you said, it sometimes is the hardest way. It's a romantic idea that we have in loving or in being what we call holy, to go off and to serve in some dramatic way in the missions or even in the convent. If we're not called to that, sometimes we can look from the outside and see how romantic that is. But it's tough to serve in our daily lives. I really take to heart what she said and realize how difficult it is to live that. It's hard.
Yeah, it is. She would say one of the biggest spiritual struggles is to smile at someone when you don't want to smile at them.
Well, that's so true.
It is. And we think about all these big things. Oh, if I would do something heroic if I really could. Actually, the most heroic thing is to try to make that smile, try to really extend your hand to somebody who you don't want to. Those are the real struggles we have in our lives.
And she really offers us something in that regard, too, because she lived for so many years in a type of desolation. She had a real spiritual darkness, and yet you don't see that when you see the images of her. You see her smile, and you see, I mean, she even smiled with her eyes. She had a laughing eyes, I think you said, in one place in your book. But she, what was going on inside of her in the later years of her life?
Well, you know, almost her entire career, for lack of a better word, as a nun, was spent in this kind of spiritual darkness. She had these initial inspirations from our Lord to go and found the Missionaries of Charity. But then, as we learned from her letters, which were disclosed after her death, she had absolutely no consolations, you know, so she went to prayer. So she had a very clear calling. I mean, Jesus speaking to her and saying, I want you to do this. And then for the next 50 years, she had nothing. That's an amazing spiritual desolation, as you put it. And yet, every morning she got up and served. And we would have never known about any of her spiritual darkness if her spiritual directors had did what she asked, which is burn her letters. But they didn't.
Right. Well, thank God they didn't. And David, thank you so much for being with us today. David Scott wrote The Love That Made Mother Teresa. You can find that book at the Religious Catalog. And David, we hope that you'll keep producing these books on the saints because they're easy reads and they're great for any audience. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Jeanette.
Again, that book is called The Love That Made Mother Teresa. It's available from our EWTN Religious Catalog. Go to EWTNReligiousCatalog.com. The item number is 6228. Or if you wish, you can order by phone. Call 1-800-854-6316. And again, that item number is 6228. Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, also Jeanette, Dan, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.